Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Saving Throws. I am your host, Red Rooster. And today, I think what we're going to talk about is going to be a bit of a comparison between Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition and Pathfinder 2nd Edition, just because of the recent OGL scandal that happened earlier this year. Lots of people who had been playing D&D have been on the lookout for another game, and lots of people jumping to the closest thing to a fantasy D&D-like game being Pathfinder, their biggest competitor. So I thought it'd be a good idea to talk about the pros and cons of each of those systems today. And just, you know, for those who maybe haven't had any experience with Pathfinder before, maybe kind of want to know how it stacks up. I mean, I like both of them. They certainly serve different needs and different gaming styles, but I thought it'd be fun to just kind of go over the pros and cons of both, just for those curious. But before we get into that, there has been some interesting stuff going on in the world of tabletop role-playing games, particularly in the D&D space, so let's talk a little bit about that. First and foremost, something as of the recording of this podcast, there was some news today, some pretty big news, that the Critical Role folks, for those of you who are Critical Role fans, you probably already know, but they have announced that they have two new role-playing games, like rule sets, in development that will be released in the next, who knows when. But one of them, called Illuminated Worlds, is going to be meant for short story arcs and apparently is very adaptable to many different kinds of settings. So I got to imagine that means sci-fi, fantasy, urban, modern-day stuff, whatever, right? But the big one that I think people are talking about more is a game called Daggerheart that they are creating, which by their description is going to be a fresh take on fantasy gaming and built more for long-term fantasy campaigns. So obviously that sounds like it's going to be a direct competitor to D&D, given that they run long-term campaigns on Critical Role. Kind of seems like this is positioned to be a big competitor, given the kind of ratings that that Critical Role pulls. There's some out there that are speculating this could be the Pathfinder to 5th edition, basically, right? Because Pathfinder, for those who know, the first version of Pathfinder that came out was a reaction to the Dungeons & Dragons 4th edition, and they became D&D's biggest competitor. But that's maybe a subject for another show to talk about those details. However, Daggerheart, something coming up. They have, apparently they're going to be previewing those two new systems at Gen Con this year. I mean, I'm going to Gen Con, so I'll see what they're showing, but it'll be interesting to what Daggerheart ends up being and to see how it actually does, because right now Critical Role are in their third season or the third campaign, which their campaigns typically last a couple years or so. I mean, I'm not a huge fan. Nothing against Critical Role at all. It's very popular, and I liked their Vox Machina TV show on Amazon. But as for the actual play stuff, I've watched a few episodes, and it's pretty enjoyable. It seems pretty fun. I know there's some controversy. Some people think that they are faking it and all that stuff, but whatever. I enjoy it for what it is, and it brought a lot of attention to D&D, which is always a good thing, I think. But after that, this current campaign wraps up, because they're currently using the 5th edition rules. Be interested to see, do they switch to a new system, their Daggerheart system, which may be ready by the time it wraps? If it, in the past two campaigns are anything to go by, I would imagine this third campaign wraps sometime in 2024. It'll be interesting if they do position this as a competitor, and it is in 2024. They're going to have a big advantage because they have all those viewers who are Critical Role fans first and D&D fans, I guess, second. But there's also a lot of people who are watching it because it was D&D as well. And honestly, they both kind of helped each other, I think. Obviously, Critical Role brought a lot of attention to D&D. But the thing is, the 5th edition system was so easy to run and pretty enjoyable. A lot of people checked it out and could follow it easier because it was the 5th edition system. So it'll be interesting to see how it happens, especially because next year, 2024, is going to be the 50th anniversary of D&D, which will also coincide with Wizards of the Coast launching that revised player's handbook and whatever for fifth edition. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. And speaking of that, Wizards of the Coast just recently, well, little bit ago now, had their content creator summit that took place, I think, in Seattle. But by all accounts, things did not go very well there, at least in terms of how it was received, because a lot of the content creators that were involved or invited there came back relatively displeased or not terribly happy with what happened there. Sounds like there was a lot of technical troubles first in terms of setting it up. Maybe the Wizards of the Coast wasn't overly prepared for what happened, but I know that those that were there seemed to think that the focus was on the virtual tabletop, but they felt that they were brought there under false pretenses. There's a little bit of shuffling and scrambling to try and fix the situation, but apparently it didn't go over so well with everyone. But at least at the very end, we got some more information about the upcoming, like I mentioned before, the upcoming rules update coming out in 2024 for the 50th anniversary of D&D. Previously, Wizards has been calling this one D&D, and a lot of people just kind of assume, okay, well, whatever this one D&D thing is, it's basically just code for sixth edition. But they kept saying, no, it's not sixth edition. No, it's not six. It's going to be backwards compatible with the original 2014 books, et cetera, et cetera. Now they've just come out straight out and said, you know what? We're dropping the whole one D&D moniker. This is just Dungeons and Dragons, and it's just 5e. It's just fifth edition. It's not 5.5. It's not some sixth edition. It's nothing else. It's just D&D fifth edition. They're simply re-presenting and reorganizing the rules, doing some slight tweaks, as most games do have errata as they go, and being represented in a more and an easier, I should say, to read and digest way versus what the 2014 books said, which, you know, kind of makes sense to a certain extent. I went through fourth ed. I mean, I've been with D&D for a long time, as you know, but I remember going through fourth edition, from that whole launch to, I mean, that edition was not very well received compared to the previous editions. And eventually they had what they called D&D Essentials, which was a repackaging and a representation of the fourth edition game, but would be backwards compatible with the original fourth edition core books. And a lot of people at that time were saying, oh, this is just 4.5. This is just them changing everything. This is a mistake, blah, blah, blah. But it actually turned out that Essentials was exactly what they said it was. It was just, they represented it, different ways to create characters, some different abilities, but everything was 100% fully compatible with the core rules. Obviously, there was some errata over the years, so some stuff had changed, but it was not incompatible at all. It was just simply, I think, as they said at the time, it's just a different kind of on-ramp to the system. And I kind of get those vibes from what this re-presentation of the Player's Handbook, Dungeon Master Guide, and Monster Manual are. I mean, certainly we know that there's been a lot of stuff from those original core books where, you know, like their challenge ratings and stuff like that, that just the math just didn't match their steps. So from my understanding, it's going to be a little more accurate to that. But otherwise, everything should be, you should be able to play any character, race, and class from the PHB from 2014 to anything from the 2024 books, should be able to play side by side without any kind of issue, from my understanding. But I guess, you know, time will tell. Who knows? But that's kind of the hot stuff going on in the world of tabletop role-playing games, and particularly D&D. But yeah, but outside of that, beyond that, like the games that I'm currently playing. So I guess I haven't really shared too much about this, but currently I play in a few different games. The game I consider to be my primary game, my weekly game, we're currently running through Baldur's Gate Descent into Avernus with D&D 5th edition. So this is a group that I'm basically a forever DM with, but I'm not complaining. I love it. I love DMing. And to be honest, for a long time, I had been DMing so much that when I finally got to actually playing in a couple games, I think I kind of forgot how to play. I would be like, my turn would come, like, I don't really know what to do because I'm used to just being the DM. So it's just a weird phenomenon. I don't know if I'm the only one who has that kind of weird problem, but when I DM a lot and then I finally get a chance to play, I feel like I'm not a very good player because I don't really know what to do. I know how to DM pretty good, but coming down to actually playing again, I feel like I'm always at a loss for what to do. But I mean, obviously I'm over that now because I play now in a couple different games, but right now my prime game is, I would consider it to be Baldur's Gate Descent into Avernus. I play every week. As well, I'm playing a monthly game. No, sorry, it's a every other week game, I should say. It's a bi-weekly game, which is, we're using Pathfinder First Edition, but we're playing in a Forgotten Realms game. And basically the DM for that was great. He's a great DM. He's running us through, we started off with Expedition, to Underbound. That was the one. It was a D&D 3.5 module that he really wanted to play, but then he started picking up a whole bunch of Forgotten Realms published modules from that time, and we built a big campaign out of that one. We're into level 14 or 15. I think we're almost at 15 now. Likely gonna finish that campaign at a high level, but and it's we're I think we're gonna get closer to the end. It's still a little ways to go, but because we've been playing it for years, it's very fun, but it's always interesting jumping back and forth between 5th edition and Pathfinder First Edition. I swear, I play all these different variations of D&D. Like, I play a lot of DCC, Dungeon Crawl Classics, quite a bit. And because that's yet another variation of D&D, sometimes I mix and match the rules all the time. It's hilarious, but it's fun. I love playing all these games. But yeah, that every other week has been this Forgotten Realms campaign. That's been a lot of fun. And another game I play regularly was the Curse of the Crimson Throne adventure path, which is being run. We're running it through. It started out with Pathfinder First Edition as it was originally published, but we ended up transitioning to D&D 5th Edition because the DM for that one just said, you know what, I'm just going to homebrew, convert everything on the fly, just because he found that he liked running D&D 5th Edition better. Just in the interest of time, right? So that has been a great adventure path. We're getting the quality of the Paizo writing along with the ease of the D&D 5th edition rules. So it's been great fun, that one. And I mean, I've played several other games too, but those are my prime ones. I have a monthly game I play as well, and other games that I've played and not necessarily currently playing, but like for D&D 5th edition, we previously completed Curse of Strahd. Such that was a great adventure path. I loved it, and I would play that one again because it's a very good way to have that open sandbox style where things can go very differently. And I think that was probably one of the strongest one of the published 5th edition adventures. I played through Princes of the Apocalypse, probably one of my least favorites, to be honest. It's kind of a bit of a slog. I liked a lot of the lore in it, but outside of that, felt a little bit of a slog to me. Storm King's Thunder was pretty good, a little aimless, but pretty decent. And Tomb of Annihilation, I loved that one. That one got right to the end, but that group fell apart near the end, and we never got to satisfyingly end it off. And I'd like to eventually see the end of that campaign, but close enough. It got right to the end too, but what can you do? And as for, like I said, plenty of Dungeon Crawl Classics. Do a lot of those one-offs. That is so much fun. I would really like to do a long-term Dungeon Crawl Classics campaign, although obviously that system is very difficult, so I don't know how well it would support long-term play. But I love the tone, obviously, and just how it makes magic particularly very dangerous feeling and very awe-inspiring, as opposed to root or rote, I should say. And otherwise, I played a lot of Adventures in Middle-earth, and an older version of Middle-earth role-playing. That was the one that was licensed off the movies back then. I used to play a little bit of that one. It was a kind of a slog to play through, but obviously playing in Middle-earth was a lot of fun. So, tons of great games. But this is something I'm curious if you guys would be interested in hearing me give you some just mini brief recaps of the current games I'm playing to say, hey, this is where I'm at in this campaign. This is what we've done. I don't want to have any major spoilers for adventure paths necessarily for pre-published ones that others might be playing, but let me know if it's something you'd be interested in hearing about, because I'm also cognizant of the fact that there's always that stereotype of the D&D person telling everyone stories about their D&D character or the D&D games they play in, and everyone's kind of rolling their eyes like, oh God, here we go again. But if it's something that people would like to hear about, even just a brief little, hey, here's where my groups are at now. Let me know. But otherwise, What else do I have to say? Something else that I picked, something I picked up recently. I just over the past weekend, I was at my local gaming store, and a book caught my eye. I knew it was coming out from Kickstarter before, but I had not realized it was actually hitting store shelves yet. And this was Kobold Press's Campaign Builder, Cities and Towns. I picked this book up, didn't know much about it, wasn't sure what the reception was, but I like Kobold Press. They do really good stuff. And I'm really into homebrewed campaign stuff. And I mean, in my opinion, that is where real, like, I mean, I know I'm playing all these adventure paths right now, but that's more for, you know, ease, and also a lot of people who want to try these other adventure paths. But I love, love, love homebrew stuff, a homebrew world. I have my own campaign setting. I have a lot of that stuff. So I love picking up tools that help people to create. And this one, I didn't know what I was going to get with it, but I, like I said, I generally trust Kobold Press, and I haven't looked at it extensively yet, but I flipped through it, and I'm really impressed by it. I think it's really solid information, and what I love to see is it has stuff to sub it's mostly system agnostic, although a lot of it does have fifth edition stats in it too, but you can really use it for anything fantasy wise. But it has support for high magic kind of societies, as well as if you're going to have mid to low to no magic at all in your game. And I love seeing support for that, because I think the default is usually high fantasy, super magic all the time, which makes things feel superhero-y in my opinion. So I like, when I usually want to do homebrew stuff, I like the presence of magic, but I like it to be something a little more mysterious, something a little more dangerous, so someone would think twice if they had access to using it. But I like how it supports that style of campaign building as well. So if it's something you're interested in, especially for building city, my early impressions are pretty positive about it. So I'd say look into it. Check it. The reviews have been pretty positive. I looked it up after, so check it out. See if it's something you like. But it looks pretty good. I'm happy with it so far. So anyway, just thought it would be something that would be interesting to bring up. But yeah, let's move on now to what the subject of the show is today, and that again is looking at the pros and cons of D&D 5th edition and the pros and cons of Pathfinder 2nd edition. Again, I'm not necessarily taking any hard stance here, but just talking about what I consider to be the pros and cons of each of those systems. Like I said, I like them both, but I won't lie, I do have a preference for D&D personally, but there is a lot of appeal for Pathfinder, and I'm always keeping up with what Pathfinder's doing too. Sometimes the mood gets me right, and I just want that crunchier game. But without further ado, let's get into it. So let's start with D&D 5th edition first. This was the first to market before 2nd edition of Pathfinder. So D&D 5th edition launched in 2014, and this was after a few years of playtesting coming off of the relatively poor reception of D&D 4th edition after Pathfinder had its first edition do really well and had supplanted D&D for a time during that era. So this was D&D coming back from the brink, licking their wounds, revisiting the game's history, and trying to represent it to the world. And at the time, positioning it as this is going to be the best of all the editions. We went back through the history. They played through every single edition of the game and tried to pull the best of what every single edition had, and somehow tried to incorporate that into the spirit of this. And honestly, I think they did a really good job, especially in the earlier books, in capturing that. Not to say that the later books don't, but I can't lie, some of the later books do have some issues. But regardless, let's go over the overall pros and cons, and we'll start with the what I think to be the best, most noteworthy pros. And keep in mind, I might be forgetting something, and if that's the case, let me know. You know, send me an email, let me know what I might have missed, or if you disagree with anything. But what I think the pros are for D&D 5th edition, number one, and I think this across the board, overall, this edition makes D&D much more simplified and easy to access. So if you are someone who had never played D&D before, it was easy to understand the game, much easier to pick it up, learn the game, and start playing the game. It was much more accessible than the game really had ever been previously. In the old days, you know, first, second, third, and in the third edition, of course, after Wizards of the Coast got involved, it had a little more difficulty for people to access. Never mind it's at the early in the early days satanic reputation, and then of course after that it's incredibly nerdy reputation. So a lot of people are like, oh, I don't want to play that nerd game. But now you started to have celebrities talking about it. Someone like Joe Manganiello and Vin Diesel had his say about D&D, getting some people a little more aware of it. And because of movies like Lord of the Rings, people came around on fantasy, on these fantasy games. Video games kind of got accepted into mainstream, and then it was just a hop, skip, and a jump to fantasy role-playing games. Now these really are accepted into more mainstream-like audiences. I mean, we just saw the D&D movie that I think was reasonably successful, and it was really good. I really enjoyed that movie. But fifth edition is a lot of the simplicity of the rules, the ease of use is what I think I feel we have to thank for that. Of course, things like Strange Things and Critical Role, as I mentioned previously, did a lot to help boost the reputation of the game. But if you didn't have an easy to access rule system, as much as I like third edition could be pretty dense. If you had that system, I don't think it would have been in the place where it is now. Fifth edition is very approachable. So as an example of that, one of the things that came up in D&D, like old editions of D&D had all sorts of fiddly math, right? Lots of +2, +3, +4 for all these different situations and different types of bonuses that would stack. Some didn't. It got very confusing. And sometimes it just became kind of a chore to play through. I found it to be a little bit, some people loved it, but, and don't get me wrong, I like those additions, of course, but, that kind of fiddly math would get kind of trying sometimes, especially if it was at the end of the day, you're kind of tired. What they came up with is the concept of advantage and disadvantage. This is something that it feels so obvious. It feels like it must have always been here because it just makes so much sense. Instead of having all these fiddly bonuses, it just comes down to you basically have advantage or you have disadvantage. I think mechanically, I've heard that if you're having an advantage is akin to basically having what could work out to be up to a +5 bonus to something, but it keeps it simple and it doesn't stack. It's just you have advantage or you don't, or same thing, you have disadvantage or you don't. And really that you're just rolling two d20s, adding your modifiers, and then you have two results. And if you have advantage, you take the higher result. If you have disadvantage, you take the lower result. It's pretty ingenious, really. And I think this is the kind of thing that lots of people, well, I would say have been stealing, but most people are just developing for fifth edition. But I think that was an ingenious thing that really helped to simplify a lot of the more fiddly bits. I mean, they still have +2s and +5s here and there, but mostly it comes down to advantage or disadvantage. And I think that's a huge hallmark that it brought to the game. And I suspect that any future iterations of the game will always see advantage and disadvantage as a thing. The other thing is, I think that the fifth edition system, because of its ease of use, the system is very modular out the box. So you can add as much complexity as you want to it without breaking the system. Or you can keep the complexity out of it. A good example here is feats, something that was introduced in third edition and just kind of exploded through Pathfinder, through third edition, throughout fourth edition. Tons of feats, feat chains, all sorts of stuff like that, right? So it got very complex and very difficult to manage. And the further on in level your character got, you just had loads and loads of options where it's just like, oh gosh, you better keep playing that character regularly, because if you take a little break, you're not going to remember how exactly to make that character work anymore. But fifth edition, you can keep that stuff at a minimum. Feats by default are not, well, aren't even on, but by default, if you use feats, they're not nearly as complex as they are in the later edition, or in the previous editions, I should say. But they're also considered optional. You don't have to have feats, and you could play, your character may not have feats, but you could play with a character that is using the feats rules, and you're not, that person is not going to be that much more, any more powerful or imbalanced than you. So it does such a good job at keeping things an even playing field. Being able to have such modular rules, things like flanking or stuff that made the required use of miniatures, are now optional. You can have them if that's the kind of game you like to play. But if you want to play more of a theater of the mind kind of play, these rules can be simplified a lot more and very easily supported in the fifth edition system without breaking anything. So I find that because of this, they're able to replicate many different editions of styles of play, right? So from the first edition, grittier times, the third edition, more complex times. You're not going to get it exact, but you're going to get the spirit of this stuff to very the basic, very simple. Let's just go and play, sit down, have a character ready and play. You can do that too. So I think this system is really quite ingenious in being able to support all that stuff with this modularity. The bounded accuracy as well is something that they were talking about right from the beginning. And basically what that is they're keeping the math flat. So from level 1 to level 20, you're not going to have this huge increase to your armor class number. It's going to be, as a level 20 character, you can still get hit from 11 level 1 goblin. It's going to be more difficult, and your hit points are going to be massively higher. That is really not going to make much of a difference to hit you, but you can still effectively hit things that are much higher than you. And you can play as a level one character with someone who's a higher level and still be able to properly play with those characters because there's not huge bouts of disparity between character levels. So it just kind of, the characters grow more horizontally rather than vertically every time they level up. So it makes things a lot more broad and able to play together very nicely. And I think that opened the game up something fierce. As well, I think D&D 5th edition typically is much easier to play narrative focused games if you want. And role playing in general seems to be highlighted more so in these books. A lot of the flavor text, a lot of the rules are in support of role playing. And it kind of goes to their rulings and not rules, philosophy. So there's rules in this game, but it's all about how the DM makes a ruling. That's what counts. And that's what I really like about this, that it really does focus on making those rulings in the situation. It's very clear about it. And speaking of that, I do love how it gives power back to the dungeon master. So for example, magic items are no longer in the player's handbook. They're in the Dungeon Master Guide. And personally, I think that's where they belong because it's up to the Dungeon Master to pass this stuff out. And I like the scaling back of magic items. Magic items feel special again. When you find them, it's something to be excited about. It's not like, okay, well, I'm level 2 now. I should get my plus 1, whatever. Usually the magic items have a little more flavor. And this is what I meant by role-playing being a little more highlighted, that these magic items will have more lore behind them. They'll have more meaning. There's not a whole lot of just disposable magic items that are being thrown out left, right, and center. The characters feel like less like Christmas trees with all these shiny ornaments on them. If you have a magic item, it's a big deal, and it can last you for a long time in your character's adventuring career, right? If you do want to have that kind of game, though, where you have a million and one magic items, you can have that. Like the system does also support that because some people do like that kind of thing, and that's fine. Like the more superhero-ish kind of approach, you can absolutely do that. And another thing I really like about this whole bounded accuracy system is that there's not any expected by this level, you should have this many magic items with this much of a bonus to your attacks. They don't have any of that built in that you have to parcel out specific treasures like you had in previous editions. By previous editions, I mean third and fourth. So that's great to see that loosened up a bit. And I don't feel that the balance is taken off too much in that way. I also really like that this edition is also embracing a lot of the campaign settings. Not every setting that they have that I would like to see back again, for example, Greyhawk, have made full glorious returns. So we saw some Greyhawk with the Ghost of Saltmarsh, but they do have a lot of very famous, like at least in the hobby, very famous campaign settings. Obviously there is Ravenloft. We just recently saw Spelljammer make a return out of obscurity, right? And obviously Forgotten Realms, lots of stuff that has come out. They've even embraced their Magic the Gathering settings, which is a cool little crossover for those. There's lots of Magic players that also play D&D. So very cool to see the support for all these systems and continuous support for this stuff. I love the wealth of content that they have coming up for it, and by that I mean third-party support. Because of the popularity of the system and the way they had released things over in the OGL, which I know that's a separate issue altogether because that the recent controversy, but with the Open Gaming License, they have had tons of third-party support, and because again, the modularity and the simplicity of the system made all these things very easy to incorporate into your game and mishmash your own. On top of having this wealth of content from like people like Cobalt Press and Runehammer Games with their hardcore 5e mode or the hardcore mode, amazing by the way. Deathbringer from Professor Dungeon Master, amazing stuff. Not necessary for everyone, but you can find pretty much anything you would want to plug into your 5e game, and you can probably find it here because there's so much stuff out there and good quality stuff, not like the glut during the third edition days. But on top of that, if you can't find something very specific you want, it's not actually terribly difficult to just develop the stuff that you want for your game. It very much supports an ease of development. If you like, I mean, I've put a lot of my own custom content to my games. Like I said, I have my own campaign setting. I'm working on my own variant of the rules too that play more to the style that I like, and it's really easy to do. I think the core 5e system, I think the math is great in terms of how it's very loose and very easy to mold to what you want. Even if you don't have a lot of experience in game design, I mean, I co-authored something with a friend of mine that we put up on the Dungeon Masters Guild, and it sold relatively well. So I have zero experience in game design, but fifth edition is pretty easy to develop for. So you're going to feel as a Dungeon Master, it's easier to get into DM, and you're going to be able to tinker with it a little more. And speaking of DM's Guild, DM's Guild is another great thing that came along with this edition. This is basically Wizards of the Coast opening up their many campaign settings for use in published material, with the caveat that you have to publish it on their website. They take a cut of your profits because you can sell it. But just them allowing you to play in their worlds that they've opened up there is a lot of fun, because there's a lot of love for things like Forgotten Realms, obviously for Ravenloft and Spelljammer, all these things. So if you want to find some additional supplements, let's say you bought the Spelljammer book and you went through that content and you want to find more optional rules, go into DM's Guild. Someone out there has created tons of Spelljammer stuff that you can download for usually a pittance, usually very cheap. And quite often you get the stuff a print on demand too. So, and also a lot of the old edition stuff is very easy to port into fifth edition. So I can take old second, especially second and first edition modules very easily, just to take what they have laid out there and use the fifth edition equivalent stats. Very, very easy to do. Fifth edition really supports that very well. And of course, there's D&D Beyond, their answer to after they took off their PDFs for fear of piracy back in the fourth edition days. Coming back with D&D Beyond as their digital solution, it seemed kind of weird first because I kind of just wanted that PDFs, but actually I really like D&D Beyond. Like having those searchable electronic copies and having it sync across all my devices, D&D Beyond's really good. I have to admit, I really like it, and I think it's a real strength of this edition. You don't have to get it. You can stick to the old physical books, which is my personal preference, but having the D&D Beyond option is great. And they've had a lot of free stuff over the years that you could add into your account there. So having that stuff as supplemental is great. So I recommend D&D Beyond, or at least looking into it if you're into the digital stuff. And lastly, the last thing I want to talk about for pros is if you are just getting into D&D, or if you're someone who's coming back to, like a lot of people who used to play in D&D came back to D&D for fifth edition, someone who maybe hadn't played since second. Coming back, I remember playing it as a kid and I hear all about D&D again. Why is it so popular? I'm gonna check it out. Okay, let's play fifth edition. It's really easy to find a group. You can find public play, and I mean, especially now the pandemic is done, you can find online play. There's lots of different options to find people to play with if you're looking for it. It's not always like exactly easily. You can't just like right this very second turn walk into a crowd and say, "All right, who's playing D&D with me tonight?" Well, maybe you could, but it is much easier than it used to be. It used to be very difficult. I remember the days of having to go into like comic book shops or game shops and putting posters up or not posters, but like sheets up on their community board saying looking for a D&D group, or you know, we need one more player for our gaming group. And this is before, I mean, obviously the internet later, right? But this is before D&D was widely accepted anywhere. Anyway, interesting stuff. But fifth edition, because of its proliferation, has made it very easy to find a group for that system. So those are the pros. I maybe rambled a little bit, but I do really like fifth editions. I think it is one of the strongest versions of D&D, at least rules wise. But let's get into, like, I mean, it's not perfect. Let's get into some of the cons. And right off the top, for D&D 5th edition, one of the cons I would say is that the game, just as written, it's a little too easy. As a player, there's not too much challenge, there's way too many ways to avoid death and not too many consequences, which I kind of think has built a bit of a entitlement amongst players who view, oh well, if your character dies, well, that's just too punishing. And then to the point where there's, I see some people, and this is fine for other people, not, it's not a rule I like, but having, like, you're making your death saves, and there's an optional rule that it's not written anywhere, but some, I've seen some groups take on where you can choose to share your death roll result or not, because maybe you don't want your character that you invested so much time in to die, so therefore you can just say, my character survived. But I don't know. What's the point then, I think, right? Like, you should have to have the threat of death. But even then, you have to get to the point where you actually get knocked down and die. And honestly, the characters become so powerful in D&D that it is, even though they crank back the magic items, it still kind of feels like a superhero-ish game. It does, you can crank it back to be more lethal, but it requires a little more work on the DM side to do. It's easily doable, but as written, the game itself is pretty easy, and I think it's kind of generated a lot of players who aren't interested in playing a game that might have danger. But you know, fair enough. If that's what they like, that's what they like. But it's not for me personally. Also, I think, you know, like I said before, rulings and not rules is that the philosophy, which is great, but that also led to some rules that are a little too vague when maybe they shouldn't be, especially some spell descriptions that leave it open for interpretation, where in some cases you might be in a life or death situation in your game and need to know how does this work exactly, and it'll send you online looking for various interpretations, only to be like, well, I guess we're just gonna have to wing it, find out what works for the group. But sometimes you want to have something that is definitive there. So I will certainly admit that some of the rules are a little bit too vague when maybe there should be a little more guidance in there. But I guess that kind of goes into saying the DM should make the call, which I agree with. But in some cases, it'd be nice to have some stuff a little more clear in the rules books. The official supported material, typically, like I'm talking the adventure paths, typically go from level one and cap out at around 11 or 12. So there's very little officially supported high level content, and I'd like to see more of that, because honestly, I think the game can support it, but there seems to be this impression that maybe fifth edition can't handle high level content, which I don't agree with. I think we can certainly handle it. They just find that most games stay within the 1 to 10 range and sometimes a little bit higher, and they just typically don't provide too much higher level content. The one that I published was actually specifically a high level, like I think it was an 18 to 20 scenario that took place in Avernus, and it was a lot of fun. I remember playtesting it, thinking it was great. But it's an interesting situation with fifth edition. Rules wise, you know, you could have two characters of the same class, and there's not really too much to differentiate them rules wise, because to be quite fair, there's not too much in the way of customizability outside of just flavor customizations, right? But in terms of actual rules, a lot of the stuff are gonna mechanically function the same. So you don't have a huge, like, there's a lot of different subclasses, but there's not a huge amount of differentiation between people who are playing the same classes or subclasses. So that's certainly one thing. And I also think that the spirit of this edition and has kind of veered too far into the focus on the rule of cool, where, you know, again, going back to that rulings and not rules, focusing on I'm gonna do this cool thing, where it's like, okay, well, that's not really supported by the rules, but it's cool, so go for it. But in some cases, I'm just like, you know, I like that. I like having it, but if everything if you say is just always meant to be cool so you can get away with skirting a rule, I'm all for trying anything you want, but applying the rules consistently, I'm less likely to say let's apply the rule of cool, although I'm not 100% against it, but I think that there's a case to be made for limiting that, because then it just kind of at some point becomes, okay, what's the point of having the rules then? I think. And one thing I haven't really liked so much with 5th edition, it's not about the rules themselves, but it's just that Wizards of the Coast has opted to not show up at these fan-facing conventions. So you don't see them at they pieced out a Gen Con pretty early on. The first year 5th edition came out, they were there, but after that, Wizards of the Coast has almost no presence at Gen Con, which is the con for this industry, right? They opted to go to places like PAX and Comic-Con and stuff like that to try and introduce D&D to people who aren't all necessarily there for games, right? And that's a smart business move, I get it, but I kind of wish they would put a little more focus on their home crew, right? Show us some love, like be there, have celebrate the game with us. I'm hoping that for next year, 2024, they show up in a big way at Gen Con because it's the 50th anniversary of the game. So I gotta think they're gonna, but honestly, you just don't know. And obviously, earlier this year, we had that recent OGL scandal where they tried to deauthorize the OGL and all the ugliness that came out of that. And it's just kind of a grim reminder that D&D is owned by Hasbro, this corporate entity. And every once in a while, the corporate overlords get involved and try to make business-faced decisions that don't gel very well with the community. So it's just the reality of the brand, especially being as big as it is. And now, they made this huge successful movie with it, and they have expectations for it. So sometimes they're going to get involved and rock the boat a bit. And the audience, D&D audience, is really intelligent, and they're not going to put up with this kind of nonsense when it happens. So it's a bit of a downer to have to like hear that bad news, and just kind of hear the just the general attitude on D&D is down. But at the end of the day, you love the system, but it just kind of sucks that can happen sometimes. But fair enough. It's just how business works sometimes, right? But yeah, so that's it for 5e. And I think a lot of you probably know this stuff. You may agree or disagree with some of my points, but let's move on now to Pathfinder 2nd edition specifically, because 1st edition, like I said before, was very popular. It was a competition to D&D 4th edition, and it established it was just a continuation of the 3rd edition D&D after Wizards of the Coast moved on beyond it. But as D&D 5th edition came out, Pathfinder 1st edition started to decrease in popularity, and a lot of people were leaving it because it was a very complex game, to finally go on to 5th edition, which was a little more refreshing because, like I said, of the simplicity in its rules. So Paizo, seeing their sales change, had understood it was time to move on. I mean, keep in mind, Pathfinder First Edition had at least a 10-year run. They were looking to move on to something a little more fresh. So they brought out their 2nd edition. They had a playtest period with it, kind of like what they did with D&D 5th edition, and eventually launched it in 2019. So let's talk about the pros. Number one, the thing that Pathfinder is very well known for, just tons and tons of options. So your characters have options. Like what I said about D&D, how you can have two characters of the same class, not much mechanically to differentiate them. In Pathfinder, you can have two characters of the same class that look worlds apart in difference in terms of the customization options. You can customize everything. It is so flush with options. You'd be hard pressed to find an idea or concept that you can't mechanically build out with the amount of options that they present to you, which is great. There's lots of stuff in there. And I also want to point out too, another thing about Pathfinder 2nd edition, especially as compared to D&D 5th, is that the baseline game is not a pushover. It's not as written. It's not super easy. Just like I said, what 5th edition is a little bit easy. This game is not. You do run the risk of having a TPK, a total party wipe, or just death in general as a character. When I was playtesting this game, I playtested it with the Paizo staff. I went to Origins when they were playtesting it at Gen Con, and I mean, I died in a couple of the playtest games, and that played through directly into the final retail build of the game. And honestly, I love it. I love having a dangerous game. I thought that was great. I think that's definitely a strong point, is that it's difficult. But one of the biggest things I think it brings to the table here is what they call the three action system, or the three action economy. So D&D typically has, like, you have your action in third edition, you have your action, your standard, or like your standard action, your move action, your, I can't remember. There's a whole bunch of different types of actions that you could take, and it kind of got complex and a little bit convoluted. D&D 5th edition boiled down to you just have an action and you have a move. That's it. And sometimes a bonus action. But with Pathfinder 2nd edition, they said you just have three actions. Everything costs an action, or sometimes something that's a little more involved costs two actions. But it's very simple to understand. You have three actions per turn. Spend them however you will. If you're a fighter, well, I just want to attack this guy three times. You can do it. Go for it. You're going to take a penalty for every subsequent attack, but you can do it. I want to move all three actions. I just want to move as fast as I can. Okay, all three actions you can move, so you can move further than typically you'd be able to. Lots of things. Every single thing has an action cost, and it just makes it very simple and easy to make the game flow a little better. So I think that's a really good innovation, and I'm pretty sure that they're gonna. I hope they would stick with it going forward. I like their skill system. Their skill system is improved over the D&D 3.5 slash Pathfinder 1 in terms of how progression works. Because in D&D 3.5 and Pathfinder First Edition, as you got grew in level, you would naturally get better at the skills. You'd allocate new skill points, but in the higher levels, it just kind of fell apart. It got out of whack, and it just kind of became annoying. But I love the way their skill system works in Pathfinder 2nd Edition. They've reduced the amount of skills, so it's not such a bloated mess. And their sliding scale of moving up to, like, expert, from trained to expert and to master. I like the way it works, and I think it feels like you're making an effort to slide your skills along those scales, and it feels a little much better balanced. So I really like the way they handle skill progression in Pathfinder 2nd Edition. And speaking of progression in the game, the math in this game is very tight. It's very balanced. It is extremely tight. The disparity between the martial characters and the spellcasters is also shortened, so it's a lot more tightened now. But the math is tight and very balanced, and you don't have to worry about things like going out of whack. It is very tight. And I think something that really sets Pathfinder Second Edition apart is they've moved away from just being D&D or alternate D&D. I mean, it still is. You still have your six ability scores and everything, but the mechanics are distinctly Pathfinder. They're not just iterations of what D&D has done. They are unique to Pathfinder, and they have their own identity, and they feel different from D&D now. They feel unique now as Pathfinder. It feels very distinctly Pathfinder and not just like a D&D wannabe. So I think that's a real positive for them. And of course, something Paizo is known for is their pre-published adventure writing. Their adventure paths are amazing, and that continues here. I think they are some of the best in the business with their adventures that they write. Good stuff. I think they've done such an excellent job here, and they continue to do so. Their setting, they only have in Pathfinder, the main setting of Galarian. You can technically use the rules in anything as you want. Like, I play a Pathfinder First Edition game in Forgotten Realms, but Pathfinder is typically, I always associate it with Galarian, their home setting. And I think it's a really good setting. It reminds me a lot of Greyhawk, which is one of my favorite D&D settings. And because there's Starfinder, which is the sister game they run with Pathfinder, and Starfinder takes place thousands of years in the future of Galarian's history, but now, of course, in the whole solar system, there's kind of that cool connection to the future of this setting, which is just kind of like a kind of bonus side thing. But I like that the flavor of the setting overall. I think Paizo does an excellent job with that. And Paizo also supplies the game with plenty of really good accessories. Their pawns, which can be used for any system, are great. Their flip mats, same thing, can be used for any system. But they're all keyed specifically to their scenarios, their games. They do such a good job at supporting players with accessories, lots of stuff. So there's lots of stuff that you can get. And another thing I think is a very strong part for Pathfinder, second edition, but also just anything Pathfinder or even Starfinder, is that they have a very well-supported public play program. If you want to play Pathfinder, it's definitely more complex, but they have a very welcoming and very good, very tightly run public play system, Pathfinder Society. And I used to be very involved with Pathfinder Society. I loved it. I love the idea of a living campaign that gets played in public. And that's something I'll do a future episode on, my experiences with public play and just sort of my thoughts on that stuff in general. But I think Paizo currently today has one of the best public play programs, easily. But with that, let's talk about some of Pathfinder Second Edition cons. So, like I said before, it has very tight math, which is a strength, but I also put that as a con because, as part of the tight math and the balance that they have, they also have, just like in Pathfinder First Edition, there is a required amount of gear that each character should be awarded. So, if you're a dungeon master or a game master, I guess, in terms for Pathfinder, you have to make sure, okay, you have a character who's a fighter. They've reached level two. They should be getting at least a plus one magic weapon now. So magic items don't have that same level of awe. There's an expectation that characters, depending on their level, will get a certain amount of bonuses and magic items that they're going to be able to equip themselves with. So it kind of leaves a very little wiggle room for playing a more freeform game like is supported in fifth edition. And I find that a little limiting personally. And of course, like I said already, the rules are very complex for Pathfinder, although they are much better and more condensed for second edition. They've definitely improved them. They are still very complex and they make no bones about it. They make a crunchy system. That's their intention, and that's the kind of game they want to run. So again, it's better than first edition, but it's still, if you're someone new coming into the game, very unlikely you're going to find it easy to play Pathfinder unless you have someone heavily coaching you through it. It's not nearly as accessible. And I think a lot of people who are maybe leaving D&D 5th edition after the OGL scandal, looking into Pathfinder for the first time, I suspect there are probably a lot of people that will be turned off just based on the complexity. Maybe not. And I'm sure lots of people will also love it, but I think there will be a lot of people that will be like, ooh, this is too much for me. It appeals to a sort of a specific subset or niche kind of player who wants that kind of rules crunch, because analysis paralysis sets in. When you're leveling up your character, you have this host of options to pick from, and then you don't know which one to pick. It's your turn. You have all these different abilities that you can use, and you don't know what to do. What's the best move here? And then it becomes a matter of, like, you're not really thinking, what would my character do? More of a, what's the best possible move here? There's optimal builds that you can build your character with, and a quote unquote correct way to play. If you're not building your character like this, then you're not playing the character right, will be a sentiment, will not be unfamiliar to people who play Pathfinder. So there's definitely a bit of a power gaming approach, which I don't like, because I always find that way kind of takes away from the role playing, makes it a little too heavy into games, and makes it feel more like a video game. And at that point, I would just rather play a video game if that's the case, right? But that's just me. Some people like that, and that's fine. But for me, I find that to be a bit of a detriment. I also find, because the math is so tight and it's so complex, the rules, that it's very difficult to create content for, or at least content that works well. You can create anything, but something that's not going to break the system or break down in actual practice, it's a lot more difficult, a lot more thought and playtesting needs to go into making something that's going to work. And honestly, at the end of the day, the audience is just not that big if you're looking to sell that stuff. So therefore, I just find overall there's less third-party support. I mean, they have their own, it's Pathfinder Infinite, similar to what they have in D&D with the DM's Guild, where there's user-created content, but I just don't find that stuff is as good quality-wise, because the system's a lot harder to develop for, and there's just not as many third-party companies making content. I mean, there are some, but just not as many. And honestly, the stuff that comes out is good enough, kinda, but it's not as strong because, like I said, the system's a lot harder to make effective stuff for. And honestly, Paizo, being the originators of it, are the best ones for it. So, with that too, playing the game almost definitely requires having a map and minis and all that stuff. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love playing with those things, but I also like having the option to play with Theater of the Mind without having maps and minis. If you have a small place to play in, or if you're even if you're playing online and you don't have someone's having system troubles and you can't use a visualizer, just playing Theater of the Mind is not very possible. You have to make some significant concessions in order to make it work. And in that case, in my opinion, you're making too many concessions and you're not really playing proper Pathfinder anymore. I don't think this system really helps with Theater of Mind too much. And that's fine. Again, the game is not necessarily meant for that, but I like having that at my as an option if I need it. And I think the last thing I would say as a con that comes to mind is that Pathfinder's always had this kind of like grassroots, like, hey, we're coming up as the small guys, you know, we're not as big as D&D, but we're the guys that we're going to be at the convention. And they are, they show up at all the conventions and they're very interactive with their fans. And I love that about them for sure. But a little bit, they are still a business out to make money because they're much bigger than most other role-playing game companies outside of Wizards of the Coast. So to me, they're kind of a stealthy corporate mindset where they have those same corporate goals, but just because they're not owned by a bigger entity like Hasbro and they don't have that overt in-your-face corporate stuff that shows up from time to time, I think people give them more of a pass on stuff. And there's a lot more, like when the OGL stuff is going down, they are very quick to throw their buddies at Wizards of the Coast under the bus to try and generate sales for themselves, which, you know, it's fine, of course, because that's what they're in business for. They want to make money. And I know for sure they're gamers too, and they have a passion for the game. But at the same time, there's a lot, like when people complain about microtransactions and that kind of thing, I think Paizo, like, I like their accessories, but they really do try to monetize their stuff as much as possible. It's all fine. But like I said, I think there's a bit of that stealthy corporate mindset, which I find a little bit off-putting, I guess, in the way they kind of try to cover it. I would prefer a little more transparency, but again, that's just me. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but I consider that to be a little bit of a con, but not the end of the world. But yeah, that's it. In a nutshell, that's kind of my thoughts on both D&D 5e and Pathfinder. Like I said, I personally prefer 5e, but I still really like Pathfinder. And I know lots of people out there prefer Pathfinder to D&D, so whatever floats your boat, right? Whatever you like. But those are my thoughts on it. I thought it might be nice to sort of discuss that today. So let me know what you think. What do you guys think? Are you someone out there who was playing 5e, maybe moving over to Pathfinder because of OGL, or maybe you've always preferred Pathfinder or vice versa? Let me know what your thoughts are or any questions. Maybe you want to talk about Call of Cthulhu instead. I love that game too, or any of the other games out there like Dungeon Crawl Classics or anything from the OSR, which of course I'm all about the OSR. But that's it. That's all I have to say for today. So thank you very much for tuning in. And like I said, if you have any questions, if you want to talk about anything I've discussed today, feel free to reach out. It is redroostersgamingcoop@gmail.com. So please do let me know if you have any comments. But otherwise, have a great day. See ya.